French capital, there were some clashes. It's amazing to see so many protesters on the street at the start of the holiday season. Some say that with these protests against the authoritarian measures of the French government, the Yellow Vest movement rose from its ashes. Despite clear indications that vaccination is effective in reducing symptomatic cases and deaths from COVID-19, protests continue in France, but rather against a mandatory health pass considered as a violation of individual liberties rather than against the vaccination itself. Chris Den Hunt, Paris.
A new victory against the Saudi-backed militant groups was made by Yemen's armed forces in the second phase of the Al-Nasr al-Mubin operation. The spokesman of the Yemeni army, Yahya Sariya, said Nu'man and Nata regions of the country's central province of Al-Bayda were fully liberated from the control of the Saudi-backed terrorists. He said the military operation had left hundreds of Saudi-backed militants killed and injured, adding that the Yemeni forces had also captured a number of the militants.
Our armed forces have completed the second phase of the Al-Nasr al-Mubin operation, which led to the liberation of the districts of Nateh and Nu'man, and the defeat of the elements of the militant groups associated with the Saudi-led coalition and inflicting heavy losses on them, while hundreds of them were killed, wounded, and captured.
Sariya also said the Yemeni forces have confiscated militants' weapons, which are US-made, according to military experts. They say this is yet another proof of the US military support for Daesh and Al-Qaeda terrorists in Yemen.
This operation proved that the United States supports terrorist groups, whether militarily or through statements accusing the Yemeni army of hampering the peaceful solutions. America is the one who directs and controls the terrorist groups. Today, there is a lot of evidence proving Washington's support for terrorist groups, including American-made weapons that the Yemeni army seized during the recent operation.
2 weeks ago, the Yemeni army took control of large areas in Al-Bayda, the first stage of the Al-Nasr al-Mubin operation that was launched on July 13th. The operation was part of military efforts to push members of Al-Qaeda and Daesh out of their strongholds in Al-Bayda.
Observers say the U.S. support for the terrorist groups in Al-Bayda is aimed at hampering the Yemeni army's advances toward Marib, the last stronghold of Saudi-backed militants in northern Yemen. However, the Yemeni army says it will continue the operations until the liberation of all Yemeni territories and putting an end to years-long Saudi-imposed war. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
There is no evidence of institutional racism in the UK, says a report commissioned by the British government, but a landmark art exhibition on the doorsteps of Queen Elizabeth II paints a very different picture.
War in the Babylon is the title of this exhibition about black communities and their long struggle against systemic racism here in the UK. It comes 10 years after the police killing of unarmed black man Mark Duggan on the streets of London, with the aim of shining a light on his family's struggle for justice, as well as many more families who have lost a loved one at the hands of the British state.
Since 1990, there have been 1,433 people who have died in police custody. While the majority of deaths are white British, there is a disproportionate overrepresentation of black people who die as a result of use of force or restraint by the police.
10 years since the killing of Mark Duggan, but in 2015, in Haringey, the same borough, they killed Jermaine Baker. Last week, we had a notice put out that another person of colour, black person, has been killed in Haringey by the same police.
Stafford Scott, the curator of the exhibition, and who supported many of these families in their fight for justice, designed the showcase to illustrate how systemic racism is not just present in the police force, but something that permeates through different institutions in British society.
The War in Babylon is an exhibition that we hope encapsulates the entirety of the black experience in the UK. You'd have recently heard this foolishness from some report by some geezer called Tony Sewell that said that there's no such thing as institutional racism in this country. War in Babylon says that that's an absolute lie and provides the absolute evidence that that is a lie.
The pictures, videos and texts present an account for those whose voices are often not heard, or worse still, willfully ignored by the mainstream.
We're at the Mall. That's the same address as the Queen of England, the Queen of England resides. We've moved the front line in the fight against racism and the fight for truth and rights from off of the estates, from out of the hood, and we've taken it right to the heart of the establishment.
The need for exhibitions like this is as pertinent now as it's ever been, especially as the British government expands policies like racially disproportionate blanket stop and search, while simultaneously denying the existence of institutional racism, signalling to black communities in the UK that their historic fight for equality is far from over. Ahmed Kabella, London.
Palestinians accused Israel of using unjustified deadly force against Palestinian children in the occupied West Bank. In its latest report, Defense for Children International Palestine stated that the Israeli soldiers continue to kill Palestinian children with no recourse or accountability. In its report, DCI Palestine revealed that evidence it has obtained shows children killed didn't pose any threat to the Israeli soldiers at the time of their killing. The group says that Israeli forces used lethal force against Palestinian children in circumstances that may amount to extrajudicial or willful killing.
Killing unarmed minors amounts to war crime and even crime against humanity. Israeli soldiers act in line with shoot-to-kill policy, opening fire to kill Palestinian children. The troopers know their military establishment will hold any of them accountable for killing innocent Palestinians.
On Friday, a 17-year-old Palestinian boy, Mohammed Tamimi, was fatally shot by live ammunition in his back during a peaceful anti-settlement protest that was held in Nabi Saleh town, West Ramallah. Meanwhile, on Monday, a 17-year-old Yusuf Nawaf Mhareb, a resident of the Ramallah area village of Abwin, succumbed to wounds he had sustained a prayer when he was shot in the neck by Israeli forces during a protest against Israel's aggression on the Gaza Strip. Experts say that under international law, the use of lethal force during a protest is allowed only when a direct and lethal threat to life or of serious injury exists. And as usual, Israel continues violating international law, including rules which limit the intentional lethal use of firearms, in particular against children.
Israeli forces have a twofold purpose by targeting Palestinian children. First, they want to intimidate Palestinian children to prevent them from taking part in anti-Israeli activity. And second, to oppress the Palestinians in general, to impose and strengthen the Israeli military control.
Since the beginning of the year, 10 Palestinian minors were killed in the occupied West Bank by Israeli forces using live ammunition. Palestinians accuse Israel of using unjustified force against their children. They even warn that Israeli soldiers will continue killing children in cold blood as long as they won't face inquiry. Mona Kandil, occupied Ramallah.
Speaker of Iran's parliament, Mohammad Baqir Qalibov, has met Syria's President Bashar al-Assad in Damascus. Assad said that Iran is a main partner for Syria, which offered its support in all sectors. He asserted that ongoing coordination for fighting terror had a positive impact on the ground and will continue until the liberation of all Syrian territories. Qalibov said the Syrian and Iranian people's determination to participate in the recent presidential elections in the two countries proves the failure of policies of pressure adopted by their enemies. Qalibov held a separate meeting with his Syrian counterpart, Hamoud Sabbagh. He said military and political relations with Syria are currently in their strongest and best form, expressing willingness to enhance economic cooperation with Syria.
After their failure in military war against Iran, the Zionist and U.S. regimes have waged an economic war against us. Our joint priority now is to achieve development in our countries, improve our economy, restore the infrastructure, and increase the bulk of mutual trade exchange.
Sabbagh referred to the high level of coordination between parliaments of Iran and Syria, affirming that the two countries stand together in the resistance alliance, working to eliminate hegemony and colonialism which their enemies are imposing on the region.
We held a very special and important meeting for further coordination between both parliaments through consultations and the exchange of expertise. We also agreed on activating the work of our friendship committees in the two parliaments for the benefit of the two peoples.
Speaker Qalibaf also held talks with Syria's Prime Minister Hussein Arnous. They underlined the importance of expansion of economic cooperation in both public and private sectors for facing economic sanctions, as well as the siege imposed on the Iranian and Syrian people. The exchange of visits between Iranian and Syrian officials reflects the strong historic ties between the two countries. There has been a noticeable development in economic, political, military, and parliamentary cooperation since the start of the war on Syria, which represents an alliance both states are strengthening to counter U.S. and Western pressure against them. Hamad Ali, Damascus.
Sheikh Ibrahim al-Zazaki and his wife.
Addressing the press, a member of Zazaki's defense team said the Kaduna State High Court discharged and acquitted Sheikh Zazaki and his wife Zinat of all 8 charges in a ruling that lasted for several hours. The judge ruled that the prosecution has failed to establish any case against the leader of the Islamic movement in Nigeria and his wife.
The court ruled that the charge ought not to be in the first place. You cannot arraign a man for an offense that was allegedly committed, as at the time the said crime was not an offense. And the court was very emphatic in that yes, the Kaduna State government has powers to enact laws, but they cannot enact laws to prosecute an offense retrospectively.
Sheikh Zazaki and his wife Zinat were arrested in December 2015 following an attack on his home and worship center by soldiers of the Nigerian army, which resulted in the killing of hundreds of Zazaki's supporters. In a statement, the Islamic movement said the judgment is a vindication of Sheikh Zazaki and a victory for truth and justice against tyranny and oppression.
The events of December 12th and 15th of 2015 were orchestrated by state machineries who are using the instrumentalities of state apparatus to fight a religious fight. It is strictly, the events of December 12, 2015 is strictly a fight between Shiites and Sunnis, fights that was imported from Saudi Arabia for whatever purpose.
The Kaduna State High Court has set Sheikh Zazaki and his wife Zinat free. The Islamic movement, and indeed many of Zazaki's supporters, have expressed happiness with the outcome of this judgment. Anjum Abdullahi, Kaduna.
This is IRIB English Radio.
Come on. It's time to get up. Good morning.
Good morning. Your captain speaking, and we are currently cruising over Iranian skies.
ایستگاه شهید بهشتی. مسافرین گرامی، خواهشمند از جهت تعیین مسیر به تابلوهای راهنما توجه فرمایید.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning. How is everything? Good morning, Mom.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Supplication on Wednesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah who appointed the night to be a garment, and sleep for a rest, and day he appointed for a rising. To thee belongs praise, for thou roused me from my sleep. And hadst thou willed, thou wouldst have made it everlasting, an everlasting praise that will never be cut off, and whose number the creatures will never count. O Allah, to thee belongs praise, for thou created, then proportioned, and ordained, and decreed, and gave death, and bestowed life, and made sick and healed, and made well and afflicted, and sat upon the throne and encompassed the kingdom. I supplicate thee with the supplication of one whose mediation is weak, whose stratagems have been cut off, whose term has drawn near, whose expectation from this world has shrunk, whose neediness for thy mercy has intensified, whose remorse for his neglect has become great, whose slips and stumbles have become many, and whose repentance is devoted sincerely to thy face. So bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and his household, the good, the pure. And provide me with the intercessions of Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, and deprive me not of his companionship. Surely thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, decree for me on Wednesday four things. Induce me to be strong in obedience to thee, to be joyful in worshipping thee, to be desirous of thy reward, and to abstain from that which would make incumbent upon me thy painful punishment. Thou art gentle to whom thou wilt.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio. The Spotlight.
The United States and the United Kingdom have joined Israel in accusing Iran of the attack on an Israeli tanker off the coast of Oman. Iran has vehemently denied any involvement in the attack, dismissing allegations leveled by the Israeli regime officials, including from the U.S. and the U.K. Furthermore, an informed Iranian source says that the country will give a strong and questioning response to any measure taken against the Islamic Republic's interests and security. In this edition of The Spotlight, we will look at the possibilities of a military confrontation, whether this is an Israeli plot aimed to demonize and vilify Iran.
The United States and Britain have intensified their anti-Iran rhetoric over last week's deadly attack on an Israeli-managed oil tanker off the coast of Oman without providing any substantial evidence. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken claimed that Washington is confident that Iran conducted the attack on the MT Mercer Street and vowed, quote, an appropriate response. British Foreign Secretary Dominic Raab also said UK assessments had concluded that it was highly likely that Iran used one or more drones to carry out the attack which killed a Briton and a Romanian. Iran, which has rejected similar accusations from Israel over the attack, came down on top American and British diplomats.
Iran strongly regrets and condemns the baseless accusations made by the British Foreign Secretary against Iran, which were repeated by the U.S. Secretary of State in the same context and contained contradictory, false, and provocative accusations.
The accusations also drew a strong reaction from an informed source close to the Supreme National Security Council of Iran.
Iran considers the threats of Western officials and the Zionist regime to be more of a propaganda gesture, but any moves against Iran's interests and its national security will be met with a crushing and firm response, and Washington and London will be directly responsible for the consequences.
Earlier, resistance sources told Iran's Al Alam Arabic News Network that the attack was in retaliation for a recent deadly Israeli airstrike on an airport in Syria's Qusair region. Astonishingly, Washington and London have thrown their weight behind Israel while they have produced no proof of Iran's involvement in the attack. However, they have turned a blind eye to Israel's hostile actions against Iran, including attacks on a dozen Iranian oil tankers, which was revealed in a report by the Wall Street Journal in March, and the assassination of Iranian nuclear scientists. Above all, Israel's frequent attacks on Syria and the Gaza Strip, as well as its atrocities in the Palestinian territories, have been ignored by the international community. It seems that Britain and the U.S. have given Israel carte blanche to commit crimes with impunity. The West's unwavering support has emboldened Tel Aviv to push ahead with its crimes, but the attack on the Israeli-managed ship and the regime's latest defeat in the war on Gaza at the hands of Palestinian resistance groups spotlighted the regime's weakness. It shows that the era of hit and run for Israel is coming to an end.
Well, our guest joining us for this edition of The Debate, we have publisher and editor at Politics First, Marcus Papadopoulos, who joins us from London. We also have political analyst John Busnich, who joins us from Podgorica. Okay, let me first go to you, Marcus Papadopoulos. We're looking at the fact that Iran has vehemently denied the accusations that's been leveled against it, dismissing what the Israeli regime has said regarding that attack on the vessel. The Iranian foreign minister has called the accusations childish. One of the words that he used, which he said were influenced by the Zionist lobby in the U.S. What is your take on the way that Iran is being barraged by these false accusations, as it is deemed, coming from Israel and then the U.K. and the U.S.?
Well, I will say this first of all, that in accounting for why, in terms of conflict, the Middle East is the most volcanic part of the world, one must take into consideration, indeed, it is absolutely imperative for one to take into consideration the very real fact that Israel has a flagrant disregard and contempt for the sovereignty of neighboring countries such as Syria and Lebanon and also Iran. In the case of Syria and Lebanon, Israel on a regular basis violates the airspace and maritime waters of Syria and Lebanon. And in the case of Syria, Israel has supported terrorist forces during the Syrian conflict, most notably Al-Qaeda, as evidenced by how Israeli hospitals treated wounded Al-Qaeda fighters. And those wounded Al-Qaeda fighters were greeted by Benjamin Netanyahu on television. So, when we have a look today at how Iran is being demonized, which they are being demonized, it is little surprise, because ever since the Iranian Revolution of 1979, Iran has been targeted, not just by America and Britain, but also Israel. Why? Because Iran is of immense geostrategic importance, and Israel regards Iran as being the linchpin constituting resistance to Israeli aggression in the Middle East.
Okay.
And therefore it is in the interests of Israel to try and provoke a conflict between principally America and Iran.
All right, well, John Busnish, let's take a look at what Israel has said regarding this. I'm going to go to the Premier, Naftali Bennett, who has accused Tehran of this. And he says, quote, "I declare unequivocally that Iran is the one that carried out the attack on the ship." He said that during a weekly meeting of his cabinet on Sunday. Why is it that when Israel comes out making accusations, it doesn't provide the proof?
Because it's not asked to provide the proof. You know, we have a media system dominated by pro-Israeli forces in the United States and in most of the Western world. And that results in a very biased picture of events. So we have people automatically saying that Israel is the victim, that Iran is the perpetrator, regardless of whether there is any evidence.
Let's take a look at the U.S. statement coming after what Israel has said. Marcus and the Secretary of State Anthony Blinken has said that that upon review of the available information, we are confident that Iran conducted this attack, which killed two innocent people, using one-way explosive UAVs. And he said that there will be retaliatory action coming. Did that take you by surprise that the U.S. was so quick to come out, aside from accusing Iran, saying that there's going to be a retaliatory reaction or attack coming from the U.S.?
No, that statement came as no surprise to me whatsoever. Firstly, Israel is the crucial conduit for American power in the Middle East. Where would America's supremacy of the Middle East be without Israel? Secondly, since when has the American government corroborated serious allegations against another government with evidence which would be held up in a legitimate court of law? The answer is rarely, if ever. The Americans never supplied evidence, concrete evidence, that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction, or that Colonel Gaddafi was intent on slaughtering the entire civilian population of Benghazi, or that the Syrian government was intent on massacring its own people. The American government makes these baseless allegations against the Syrian government, or in this case, the Iranian government, because the American government knows that its allegation will not come under scrutiny by American mainstream media. Why? Because American mainstream media is neither free nor independent. It is controlled by the American establishment. If America had a free press, indeed, if Britain had a free press, then I do not believe that American politicians or British politicians would be so confident in airing in public their allegations against Iran, because they know that their allegations would be taken apart by journalists who are most robust in their work and who are diligent journalists. So the Americans know very well, as the British know, they can make any allegation against any government in the world which pursues an independent foreign policy without an ounce of evidence, because the media in their respective countries are neither free nor independent.
Mm-hmm. Well, John Bosnich, this is where it gets a little bit confusing in so many words about this reaction to come. The U.S. Has said that it's going to that has vowed what it calls an appropriate response is the words that Anthony Blinken used. Now, why does it get confusing? Well, you have the U.K. also adding to that support of a response to come, but then based on an Israeli newspaper, Kan, by the name of Kan, K-A-N, it reported that Tel Aviv has received a green light from Washington and London to carry out a response to the attack. So does that mean that U.S. and the U.K. are not going to have a response, but rather Israel will take care of that, or that there's one to come cumulatively? How do you see these particular stances coming?
This is kind of a case like a dog chasing its own tail. You might have heard of the movie Wag the Dog. What happens here is the Israel lobby in the political systems, in the democratic political systems of England and the United States, is the single largest contributor to the extremely expensive political campaigns of both the government and the opposition. John Mearsheimer wrote a book called The Israel Lobby recently while I was working in Washington, and he stated clearly and showed the statistics that 60% of the funding for the Democratic Party came from supporters of the Israel lobby, and 40% of the funding for the Republican Party came from the same source. So the signal comes from the lobbyists who pay the politicians to say what they need said. And unfortunately, this is a terrible, terrible attack on democracy. It results in the politicians doing what they're told by the people who pay their campaigns to keep them in office. That means Israel calls the politicians that it puts in office to declare that what Israel says is the truth. The truth is then, so-called truth in big quotation marks, is then replicated through what President Trump himself called the lying mainstream media, who then propagate it down to the local level across the entire country. So anybody in America who still trusts the mainstream media of America has been asleep for at least the past 4 to 5 years. And what is worse about this is that it allows Israel to place America and England in a situation where they are in a checkmate position, that if they do not back Israel up, they find themselves losing their seats in Parliament and losing their seats in Congress. So Israel pulls all the strings, and this is a very, very dangerous situation, not just for Iran, but a dangerous situation for anybody targeted by that same lobby.
Marcus Papadopoulos, what's interesting about this report that I just mentioned coming from that newspaper of all places is the fact that it adds to the information that Israeli regime officials are currently discussing how and when to respond. And it says with possibilities that an Iranian port or a military ship could be targeted. I mean, we know from Israel, at least based on its record, that it's not going to discuss how it's going to conduct any type of action. I mean, we know that, for example, how it assassinated top Iranian nuclear scientist Fakhrizadeh. Now, of course, Iran has said, and I have to say this, according to informed sources, that it will give a strong and crushing response to any measure taken against its national interest and security, which it has blamed Britain, the U.S., and Israel for the consequences. Do you think that there's going to be this reaction coming, one that's being mulled over at this point by Israel, according to this particular report, the possibilities of an Iranian port or military ship to be the targets?
I do not believe that Israel will take a conventional response against Iran, and I think it is even more unlikely that America and Britain will take a conventional response against Iran. However, I do strongly suspect, in fact, I strongly believe, that Israel's response, its measures, will be of a clandestine nature, such as an assassination of a high-ranking Iranian official or a senior Iranian scientist, or indeed the destruction of an Iranian port or the destruction of an Iranian naval vessel. That, I do believe, is highly likely to be the response of Israel. When will the Israelis carry out such a measure? Well, it could be in the short term, it could be in the long term. And if Israel does resort to such a measure, which, as I said at the beginning of the show, would demonstrate again Israel's flagrant disregard and contempt for the concept of state sovereignty, that would provide the Iranian government with a legal recourse to take action against Israel. I do not wish to see any conflict in the Middle East. How many people, innocent people, men, women, and children, have perished in the Middle East because of needless wars over decades now? However, Iran has a right to defend itself. Iran has a right to national security. If the Americans and the British and the Israelis have concrete, persuasive evidence to corroborate their assertion that the Iranian government was responsible for the attack on this Israeli-owned vessel, then they should announce it at the United Nations, and the United Nations Security Council should be allowed to study the evidence. However, the Americans and the British and the Israelis have not done that so far, and they are not going to do that. The whole point here is that Iran is a target of Washington, London, and Tel Aviv. And therein lies my concern that an escalation in this matter is possible, because Iran has a right to defend itself.
John Bosnich, do you think that that's a road that we're heading down with this?
Most regrettably, yes, I do. I agree with every word, once again, that my fellow commentator has said today. And I think that this is a good time to remember history, because we are now just a few years after 100 years from the First World War. And the key words we were taught in school about the First World War was that the stupidest thing that any country could ever do is to give a carte blanche, in other words, a blank signed check to another country. And what has happened now is the United States and England have given a blank signed check to Israel in any amount. And Israel now has the opportunity to do whatever it wants. And as soon as it takes that action, in effect, it's taking an action on behalf of the American people and on behalf of the people of Great Britain without any democratic input, because the legislators, without voting on it, have given Israel the right to make war at will. And Iran is just one of the targets of this kind of a completely crazy repeat of what led directly to World War I.
Marcus Papadopoulos, if Israel was to take any action, or any, whether U.S. or U.K., were to take any action against Iran, Iran has said, and I repeat, that it's going to take, it's going to obviously value any measure against its interests and national security will be met with strong and crushing response. I mentioned the quote from Iran coming on this. Don't you think that that will definitely affect the calculations that the U.S. has made in terms of trying not to have the West Asia region in its focus, but rather to go and pursue what it has in regards to China and that area?
There's no doubt about it whatsoever. Washington seeks the destruction of the Iranian revolution to return Iran to how it was under the Shah, namely a Western client state. But I do not believe that America seeks a war with Iran, because America recognizes that the Iranian revolution has given birth to a very strong economy in Iran, a very strong military in Iran, and has brought about a great deal of unity in Iran. And the Americans understand that a military conflict between America and Iran would result in a bloodshed and would destabilize American interests in the Middle East, principally on the Arabian Peninsula. However, I am of the opinion that Israel would very much like to see America and possibly Britain embroiled in a conflict with Iran. And again, I say this, Iran has a right to defend itself. Why is it that Israel can violate the sovereignty of Lebanon and Syria? Why is it that Israel can harass and torment and massacre Palestinians, including women and children, on a regular basis, but is never pulled before a court of law? Why is it that Israel can support Al-Qaeda in Syria, and yet, when it comes to Iran, Iran is expected by the Americans and the British and the Israelis to be subservient to Western demands?
Sure. Let me address those questions to John Busnish there in conclusion. Go ahead.
Well, this is a most dangerous situation. There is zero accountability now for whatever action Israel wants to take. Israel set this situation up. Israel bought its legislators in America and in England. Israel has the weapons supplied to it by foreign countries as foreign aid. And Israel now has the right to make any kind of illegal war crime attack on Iran at any time. And this tells us that not just Israel, but those who control the United States and those who control England have zero respect for international law and have zero respect for the concept itself of justice. Because if you believe in justice, then you know that justice takes time and it takes investigation to find the truth. And the reason why all of these things are rushed the way they are is because when you rush it and you make an attack and you make a murderous bombing, you can get away with it before they can respond. And afterwards, all it is an autopsy, a political autopsy of the Western world.
All right, we're going to unfortunately have to end it there. We're fresh out of time on this. Let me thank our guests, publisher and editor at Politics First, Marcus Papadopoulos. Thank you so much for your comments. And John Busnish there, political analyst, with his comments. And with that, we come
thank you.
An end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikko Vitale, my entire team, it's goodbye until next time.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
ایمان را در خودتون تقویت بکنید، ایمانی که هم در اینجا شما را شرافتمند می کند و هم در پیشگاه حق آبرو دارید و با آبرومندی وارد می شید به تخت اعلی.
In the path of the Imam.
In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. Imam Khomeini was a religious scholar and a true worshipper and servant of God. If you remember the previous episode, it was said that Imam Khomeini, God's mercy upon him, was very heedful of doing mustahab or recommended acts, although they're not religiously obligatory. You also heard that he was very careful not to do makruh or disapproved acts. The acts that are not haram or forbidden but have been emphasized to refrain from. Today we are going to continue the discussion. Nafile in Arabic means additional. According to the Islamic jurisprudence, it means the daily prayers that are not obligatory and just recommended. These prayers have a lot of reward. There are 34 rak'at of recommended prayers, which are performed with daily ritual obligatory ones. But on Friday, 4 rak'at are added to this number. These prayers are highly emphasized to recite as God will give ample rewards for them. However, the midnight prayer is the most important recommended prayer and has a lot of effects in both material and spiritual aspects of human life. According to the statements of the Prophet and the infallible Imams, recommended prayers somehow compensate for the shortcomings of obligatory ones. Imam Muhammad Baqir, peace upon him, says in this regard, "Indeed, we have been ordered to perform recommended prayers in order to compensate for the defects of obligatory prayers." Imam Sadiq, peace upon him, also says, "God said, 'Indeed, my servant seeks proximity to me by recommended prayer and deeds, and once I like him, I will be his ear that he hears with it, his eye that sees with it, and his tongue that speaks with it.'" Hujjat al-Islam Rasuli Mahallati said, "As far as I remember, and I have heard from the relatives and companions of Imam Khomeini, he would not give up performing recommended prayers as much as he could." Dear listeners, Imam Khomeini didn't give up performing recommended prayers even when the security forces of the Pahlavi regime, Savak, intruded into his house. Late Ayatollah Tavassoli also mentioned an interesting memory. In the evening of the day in which the tragedy of Fayziyeh school happened, we were at the imam's home. We heard that the seminary students had been beaten and the regime forces intended to come there. Late Sayyid Muhammad Sadegh stood up and closed the door of the house. But Imam Khomeini immediately stood up and opened the door, saying, "Shall I close the door of my house while they are beating my children?" Then he stood up for prayer and, like other nights, performed midnight prayer, while every moment his house would likely be attacked. Dear friends, Imam Khomeini would not leave performing of recommended prayers even at the times that he was exhausted. Late Ayatollah Bani Fazil related a memory on this. In the first days after the victory of the Islamic Revolution in Qom, Imam Khomeini had public meetings from 8:30 a.m. till midday, during which he would deliver detailed speeches, so he had to go upstairs to the roof several times. One day, a few minutes before noon, the imam's face was very tired as he was going into the room. I said to myself that this time he would have a rest, but when I followed him, I saw him performing recommended prayer of midday obligatory prayer. Imam Khomeini would observe little points even in recommended prayers. For instance, he would not forget saying, "A'udhu billahi minash shaitani rajim," which means, "I seek refuge with God from the outcast Satan." Imam's companions also say that he used to recite Surah Tawhid in both his obligatory and recommended prayers, although it can be dropped in recommended ones. Imam Khomeini would not give up performing of recommended prayers even in hot summer. Ayatollah Qadiri says, "In the blessed month of Ramadan, when the imam would come to the school of late Ayatollah Borujerdi in Najaf for midday and afternoon prayers, he used to first perform the 8 rak'at recommended prayers of midday prayer and then perform the midday prayer itself. This was not an easy job for a fasting person of that age and in such a hot weather. Even the youth would fail to do it, but the imam was so serious in worships." Hujjat al-Islam Sayyid Mujtaba Rudbari relates a memory. "In such an old age and during the hot days of Ramadan in Najaf, Imam Khomeini would observe the recommended prayers of Maghrib or Dusk and Isha, that is 9 obligatory prayers, whereas we as young people were expecting to finish prayer to go to iftar for breaking the fast."
From the heart of beautiful Iran, IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.